Mampela Ramphele is a doctor, an academic, a businesswoman, and one of South Africa's most prominent female activists. But she hasn't always had good relations with South Africa's ruling party, the African National Congress, which she believes has failed to live up to its promises. Ms. Ramphele has launched her own political party platform called Agang in an effort to unseat the ANC in 2014, and she's written a book called Conversations with My Sons and Daughters. It's published by Penguin. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Thank you very much for having me.
Nelson Mandela has been hospitalized for pneumonia, but doctors are reporting today that his condition is improving. While he's obviously a towering figure in South Africa, does he still play a role in shaping the policies of the African National Congress?
Nelson Mandela has made his contribution. He's now an old man, and we love him for what he has done, but he is really now in the evening of his life.
So has the ANC changed a lot since he gave up his leadership role?
The issue really is about the promise that we all made as freedom fighters to build a country in which everyone will be treated with dignity and people will feel that they really belong. And that dream is dying.
Well, was the dream more alive when he was running the country, or were we already seeing the seeds of the problems that have followed with Mbeki and Zuma?
The dream started fading after his stepping down. But the problem is not so much an individual. It is about how we as South Africans underestimated what it would take to build a constitutional democratic dispensation.
Well, a lot of people assumed that after apartheid ended, you would have equality of the races, you would have more economic equality, but there's still a lot of inequality in South Africa, isn't there?
Indeed.
Well, why hasn't the government been able to move things along better?
The issue about the inequality and the persistence of it, it's really what we in Agang feel is a call to renew the dream, to renew the promise, to restore that promise so that people can believe that they can be able to send their children to schools where there is high quality teaching, where their children have got books, that they will be restoration of the promise that if you work hard and you're looking for a job and you are skilled, you'll be able to get a job. We need to restore that.
Is it are the problems in certain areas of the country, or is this countrywide?
If you are upper class in South Africa, you probably will be doing pretty well. But for the majority of South Africans, 80% of South Africans are really struggling. We've got unemployment levels, which officially is supposed to be 24%, but unofficially it is 40% because many people have given up looking for a job.
So nearly half the population is unemployed.
Indeed.
And yet South Africa is thought of as one of the most stable countries in the continent. Do you think that it's in danger of losing that position?
The stability is a measure of how people still hang on to the hope that things will change. And that is why we believe in Agang that there is a window of opportunity whilst people still believe that change can come about. And we are finding this wherever we go, whether we go to a rural area or a poor township, that people still believe change can come.
But you say the country is flirting with kleptocracy. Do you believe that the culture of corruption has become ingrained in the ANC?
The issue is about a culture of accountability in our governance.
But patronage is an important part of this, isn't it? And patronage goes all the way back to even the earliest days of ANC.
Patronage always comes about when people don't feel they are accountable to the rest of the population. And so what Agang is building and restoring is that culture of accountability, the culture that says every citizen matters and not just those who are within the governing party. And that's really what people are looking for. They're looking for that sense of belonging because they feel that they are forgotten people.
Well, there have been other opposition parties other than the one that you are creating. Why haven't they succeeded?
The issue of success depends very much on a strategic approach and an approach that involves and energizes the population. We made an announcement less than 2 months ago, and already we see that people are hungry for success. They are hungry for change. And the reason why they are hungry for change is because the hope they had that change will come automatically has faded. They know they must make a contribution.
The Financial Times described your use of the women's wing at the Johannesburg Old Fort Prison Complex as a backdrop to launch your movement. They said it was provocative. Why did you choose that location?
I have been detained as a freedom fighter. And so it isn't a question of being provocative. It's simply going back to my roots, to where I come from as a citizen who has gone through the struggle for freedom. And it's important that as we look forward, we do not forget where we come from.
How long were you detained? That was during the apartheid years?
Yes, in 1977 I was detained for 4.5 months.
Under what charges?
Well, detention without charge.
Mm-hmm. That was part of the system then.
Absolutely.
Would it shock you to know that F.W. de Klerk has been a guest on this show?
Well, this is the new South Africa. We are a country that has been able to pull ourselves back from the brink, and he's been part of it.
What does the name of your political movement, Agang, mean?
Agang. That's
Agang.
How you,
okay, yes. Well, it's spelled A-G-A-N-G.
Right. It's a soft G. Yeah. Agang means build. We believe we need to build the South Africa of our dreams. We need to build the South Africa that we can be proud of. And that building process has to be one that is undertaken by everybody. And so our appeal is to young people particularly who have really been marginalized, rural people who have been also marginalized, who feel forgotten, poor urban communities that also feel forgotten. So we are inviting everybody to be part of the building of the country of our dreams.
The pronunciation of your movement reminds me that there are 11 official languages in South Africa. Does that make governance a bigger problem?
Governance cannot be undermined by multi-languages. Multi-languages are, in fact, the richness. Part of the richness of South Africa is the diversity of our culture. So Agang is such a beautiful sounding word. It's my mother tongue. And it simply invites people to go back to their roots and to be active citizens that build their country.
You're right that the ANC political machinery has become adept at playing victim of apartheid and not taking responsibility for its failures. How does the ANC still play the victim all these years later?
Well, we are simply reflecting the view of many South Africans that 20 years is too long to wait for schools that work, too long to wait for young people to feel that they can participate in the economy. And so people are they're disillusioned by this waiting for the promises of freedom.
But do you think that the ANC remains the most powerful party because of its historical legacy?
There is no doubt that the historical legacy plays a very important role. Yet, if you look at the recent surveys, 63% of South African citizens believe that ANC leaders are moving away from the principles of the freedom struggle. And they're also feeling that they are no longer interested in ordinary people.
Well, does the ANC still present itself as a liberation movement, or has it now just become a political party?
We believe it's very important to put the historical facts right. The freedom struggle of South Africa was one in which many ordinary South Africans participated in. The ANC played a role, but many more people played a role. And that is what is important in this invitation to rebuild our country.
One of the reasons people credit the ANC with bringing a measure of stability to the country after the fall of apartheid is that it didn't confiscate all of the farmland that was owned by whites. But how much of the farmland is still owned by whites? Isn't it the majority?
It is indeed. But the fact of the matter is that the ANC as a political party could not confiscate anything because we are a constitutional democracy.
Unlike your next-door neighbor.
Indeed. We believe very strongly that the heritage of that constitutional democracy is what is the guarantor of security and stability in our country.
My guest is Mampela Rempele, leading South African academic, businesswoman, medical doctor, former anti-apartheid activist, trustee of the Nelson Mandela and Steve Biko Foundations, and founder of the Citizens Movement. Her book, Conversations with My Sons and Daughters, is published by Penguin, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Mampela Rempele, whose book, Conversations with My Sons and Daughters, is published by Penguin. Do you think that South Africa should take a stronger stand on Zimbabwe, especially when it's dealing with Robert Mugabe, who has a well-documented history of violating human rights?
I think the world should take a much tougher stance. South Africa alone can't really deal with the issues of Mugabe.
But it has protected Mugabe in a way that many people feel it shouldn't have.
Well, I guess that is fair comment, but if you look at where we are today, South Africa would set a much better example if we built the kind of accountable democratic dispensation that would put us in a much stronger position to be able to set the example of what democracy ought to look like. I don't think you can lecture to people. You've got to actually live the principles of freedom and democracy and human dignity.
Yeah, but if you are helping him stay in power in the same way that China helps the North Korean regime stay in power, then in effect you are part of the problem, aren't you?
Well, I think
you're
it's
an enabler, as they say in the drug world, for example.
Yeah, but it is not South Africa's people who are enabling Mugabe. And I think the change that is being desired in South Africa by South African people is a reflection that South Africa's people believe very fundamentally in our human rights constitutional dispensation. And they believe that the government is moving away from those principles. That's the reason why there is this window of opportunity in South Africa to change and become the country of our dreams.
You were one of the founders of the Black Consciousness Movement with anti-apartheid activist Steve Biko. What did you see as the goal of the BCM?
The BCM was fundamentally important in reawakening the capacity of people to believe in themselves and believe that they can shape and name themselves and change their country. Without the Black Consciousness Movement, the ANC was at that time moribund. The whole machine of apartheid had crushed South Africa's people to the point where they didn't believe that they could actually take it on. And it helped that we were young, we were students, and we believed, as many young people often believe, that we're invincible. So the contribution of the Black Consciousness Movement was breathing greater energy and purpose and a sense of self-belief.
How aware were you of what was going on in this country at the time?
I was very much aware because I was a student activist, and we were inspired by the Black Power movement in this country and the international student activist movement of the time. So we were part of the generation that understood that the status quo of that time was not tenable.
You were in a personal relationship with Steve Biko, who died in police custody in 1977. What do you see as his legacy?
His legacy is that of inspiring young people that you don't have to be over 40 to be able to make a difference in your country. And he died at 29, and he left a very deep footprint.
Oh, so his name is still well remembered in South Africa?
His name is very well remembered in South Africa. Not as much as should be the case, but many more young people today, unlike 5, 10 years ago, are seeking out his legacy because they now understand that you cannot free yourself if you don't understand that you have the power to make the changes, to shape your own future. And that's the real strength and the legacy of Black consciousness.
After the Soweto uprising in 1976, weren't you sent into internal exile?
Yes, indeed. I was sent to a remote place in the northern part of the country. But that didn't stop us as activists of that time from continuing to work amongst the people we found ourselves in. So as a medical doctor, I was able to use that period to reach out to rural communities who were without any health care of note.
Now, you mentioned the unemployment rate of 40%. How difficult has the advancement of women's issues in South Africa been, especially when it comes to employment, but also basic rights?
Well, the tragedy of our current situation is the gap between what's in our constitution, which is gender equality, and the reality that every 34 seconds, a woman is raped in South Africa. The level of domestic violence and the level of insecurity has risen. And that is the consequence of an unequal society, but also the inward-directed anger of people who feel powerless and
now,
forgotten.
We hear about that sort of thing in India, but not in South Africa. Do you know why it hasn't reached the same kind of global consciousness?
Well, I think we have many, many stories of gender-based violence in South Africa. But I believe that people do not associate, and journalists perhaps do not focus enough on the level of violence against women. I mean, a woman raped every 34 seconds, that's a catastrophe.
Well, the Jacob Zuma had his own sex scandal, and yet it didn't prevent him from achieving power.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the society has been tolerant of this gender-based violence. But this is part of what people now say they want to see change. Women in rural areas, women in poor communities are saying that it is time for us to be treated with dignity.
Not just rape. A recent study in the journal PLOS Medicine found that while the murder rate of women by intimate partners in South Africa was five times the global average. Why is violence against women so prevalent in the country? Is this a cultural thing? And what can be done to prevent it?
If you look at societies that are hugely unequal and societies with the legacy of violence, which is what apartheid and post-colonial South Africa is about, you do find that men who feel powerless tend to direct their anger at their intimate partners.
And then there's the whole matter of HIV/AIDS. 17% of all the cases in the world are in South Africa. And many people blame former President Thabo Mbeki's refusal to accept any link between HIV and AIDS as a major reason. But that's changed. Why is it still such a big problem?
The unfortunate thing with diseases such as HIV/AIDS and TB is the legacy remains long after you've started taking the right steps. The issue of diseases and healthcare in South Africa are part and parcel of why people feel the urgency for change. People are dying unnecessarily because the healthcare system is failing people. people are also dying because the education system does not prepare people to understand how their bodies function. And so we need to change our education system so that the promise of freedom, because you cannot have freedom without education. That's absolutely fundamental. And educated people are much better off in terms of looking after their own health.
You've also been critical of the what you call the militarization of the police in South Africa. Do you believe that apartheid-style police brutality could return to the country?
Brutality can return to any society if you lower your guard. That is the reason why we want to restore that respect for human dignity. We want to restore the principles of our democracy, which are really about respect for human rights.
What about homophobia in Uganda, which isn't all that far away? Laws have been passed that that make homosexual activity punishable by death. Is that something that we are those attitudes also present in South Africa?
South Africa has a human rights-based constitution. We are, in fact, fighting to restore the faith in that human rights constitution, to make sure we build a society in which homophobia will not have a place. And that's the whole purpose of AHANG, is building and restoring the promise.
So when is the next election?
We're going to be fighting the 2014 election, and the goal is to bring down the ANC below 50%.
And will you be running for president?
Absolutely.
And so it's been my great pleasure to be talking with the future president of South Africa, Mempele Rempele, about her book, Conversations with My Sons and Daughters. It's published by Penguin Books. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me.